Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from dastardly devices
to wondrous weapons. And today we're joined by a special guest, Derek Saunders.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I am Derek. I am the host of the How Not to DM podcast. And I'm super excited to be on with Will and Brian today talking about all sorts of amazing magical items. Except for we're not talking about that, but we'll get to that later.
What are we talking about?
Right. Today we are talking about, drumroll, pit fiends.
All right.
Welcome, adventurers, to the Dungeon Cast.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, William.
How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, Derek.
Hi, Derek.
Hey, what's up, Will? What's up, Brian? How you doing?
Good,
we're
man.
Doing pretty good. How
it's
are you doing,
man? Great to
have
you on.
It's good to be here. I just was listening to the first episode of your new season out while I was shoveling the walk. I was shoveling about 9 inches of snow, so I did the math. That's about 28 centimeters. And then it's about 28 degrees Fahrenheit here where I live, and that's -2 centigrade for you centigrade people out there. So I'm sorry, I'm taking your job today, Brian.
That's okay.
That's hilarious.
It's Will's job. I just say it. He does the math part.
Yeah, that's so true. That is very true.
I definitely don't mind.
What would you say? It's probably like,
now I know how the sausage is made.
Fully, yeah.
The immersion is broken.
The less you know about how a sausage is made,
the better.
It's in ratio with like how much you enjoy it, you know. Yeah. You probably should know less
I would
about
say
it.
We're in the mid-50s here now.
Yeah, so we're averaging
considerably warmer than where
15,
you're
60.
At.
Yeah,
yeah. LA, you know, year round is going to be a bit nicer than here, probably.
Yeah, it's not too shabby. But speaking of warmer climates, let's go to hell.
Oh,
so
let's do it.
So last year, we did not get to cover all the fiends that I wanted to cover. It turns out that there are a lot of fiends, and then with the one D&D episodes coming up at the end of the year, some fiendish topics had to get pushed back. Mm-hmm. But they have not been forgotten. It is time to talk about one of the big dogs of hell. This is literally as big and powerful as a devil can get without being a duke or an archduke. And in some cases, some pit fiends have even held the station of archdukes without actually ascending to a unique form. Angels fear them, demon lords respect them, ancient dragons think twice before starting a fight, and every devil in hell wants to be them. It's time to talk about pit fiends.
Every regular devil.
Yeah, every lower devil wants to be them. Obviously, so, Asmodeus does not want to be a pit fiend.
If the nine hells is a foot, then these are the toes, the big dogs.
Yeah.
Letting them out, letting them
bark.
There
we go, these are the toes. That's hilarious. So, pit fiends are the quintessential tyrants and overlords of devilkind, occupying the top of hell's hierarchy. Having been cleansed with the pit of flame, pit fiends have achieved levels of wickedness beyond that of ordinary devils, becoming beings of pure, unimaginable evil. And here's a quote from the mortal mage Nomoto Sin. Their might is incalculable. Their desires are beyond comprehension, and their appetites defy all understanding. Raised from the shrieking agonies of the pit of flame, they understand pain and suffering like no others.
Right. So if right. I remember correctly, the ice devils get chucked into this pit of flame for a thousand and one days?
1,001 days, yeah, you got
and
it.
And then they become the pit fiend.
Yes.
After not making
survive.
A mistake for like, what, 7,000?
777 years without a single mistake.
Not 7,700. Okay, that's not so bad, I guess.
there's also another type of devil that makes this transformation, and that's the Aranese. The
Aranese
kind of exist in their own separate hierarchy. But they have the privilege of being able to make this transformation if it's offered to them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
Derek, what's your experience with pit fiends? Like on a like.
So I was planning on using some in my latest campaign that just wrapped up a few months ago, but my players decided to stop making deals with an archdevil I was sending their way a few times.
Nice.
And so I didn't have to take retribution and, you know, bring Hellfire down on
right.
them. So I was planning on it. I had a bunch of ideas about using Pit Fiends, but I have never actually run one or encountered one myself.
Cool. You got close, though. That's closer than me.
Close. Very close.
Yeah, your adventurers, they got to the book that... The page in the book that was going to send them to the Yeti where they die, and they just didn't. They didn't choose that path. That's good.
So Pit Fiends are both majestic and horrifying, with a hulking 12 foot tall
or 3.7 meter
humanoid forms weighing 800 pounds.
That's 360 kilograms, folks.
Their bodies are armored with scales and quickly light a fire in response to their rage or excitement. They have a pair of massive bat-like wings that give them a gargoyle-ish appearance, often wrapping their wings around their fearsome red figures like a cloak. Their fanged maws drip with hissing green venom that can lay the mightiest mortal creatures low, and their prehensile tails can be cracked like whips.
Yikes.
Yeah. Pit Fiends form the terrifying nobility of the Nine Hells and stand undisputed as the greatest of the non-unique devils. They are the elite overseers of practically all other devils and experts in fostering terror in both mortals and devils alike. The Pit Fiends have proven themselves to have the subtlety and brutality to eliminate pretenders to their thrones. Despite all this, the prestigious rank of Pit Fiend is still highly dangerous, as Pit Fiends must navigate Hell's convoluted rules and treacherous political landscapes while still contending with the heavy responsibilities that come with their station as the servitors of Beator's true masters.
Okay, you mentioned non-unique devils.
Yes.
So they all look the same?
I mean, they look like the same species. They're not actually identical, and that is going to come up later. Believe it or not, that very specific subject will come up at the end of this episode.
Okay, so that's Jimmy with the neck wart.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
And that's Todd with the extra big feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, sick.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So they're distinguishable.
They are distinguishable from each other, but they are all blatantly of the same quote-unquote species.
So when they get put in the fire and they evolve and they become...
Yeah,
the species, but they...
It's
they...
just like Pokemon. All Charizard mostly look the same, but there's slight differences.
Yeah, like Ash's Charizard is like a tiny
bigger,
little...
smaller, different stats.
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly
different right. stats?
Yes. Yeah, they definitely have different IVs. That's without a doubt.
Charizard would have different
oh,
stats.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes, you're right.
Just a Pokemon joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
No, I thought we were talking about stat blocks.
That, I liked it.
I mean, you could. Like, it's D&D, right? You could make your stat block whatever the heck you want it to
Absolutely.
Be. But I think it's interesting that it talks about, like, having to deal with all of the rules and stuff. I don't remember where I saw this, but someone made the point that, like, devils are basically the worst kind of rules lawyer ever. Like, everyone's looking out to, like, for a way to nitpick and, like, correct somebody
yep.
else for breaking the rules.
Yeah.
And then you get sent back another rung, you know, like, mm-hmm. what a place to be.
Yeah, no.
I can't imagine it's very
It's
fun.
The definition of a toxic environment, for sure. Everyone's trying to have the yes. gotcha moment with everyone else.
Yeah, gotcha, exactly. Yeah. Everyone's just waiting.
It's very true.
Ugh.
So Pit Fiends are made from worthy Ice Devils or Aranese, who are subjected to the Devil Scorching Hellfire from the Pit of Flame for 1,001 days. Good job, Brian.
Thanks.
After rising from the
good that time,
after rising from the Pit of Flame,
yeah,
the new go ahead.
No, it's a great. Okay.
After rising from the Pit of Flame,
I was saying he did.
We got a delay, guys. We got a delay. It's all good. I'm going to start reading now. After rising from the Pit of Flame, the newly created Pit Fiends gain a perfect understanding of their natures as devils. So it's like a weird form of enlightenment that they reach.
Yeah.
It's an evil enlightenment, but it's enlightenment.
Yeah, just feeling 1,001 days of pain is a way to, like, up your mind game, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Their spirits are completely purged of impurity, for they have willfully chosen to reject chaos in its entirety. They are both self-entitled narcissists and tyrannical masterminds that scheme to bring their dark agendas to fruition and ruthlessly pursue their inscrutable desires. Within the depths of their enigmatic mind, or minds, is a vast manipulative intelligence and a unique understanding of agony.
Oh, man. So after the Ice Devils, you and maybe the Aranese, you have a bunch of devils that are mostly just, like, fucking up all the time? Or, like, leaning towards chaos? Like, probably not chaotic, but, like... Maybe not following rules to the T.
I think what it's saying here is, like, obviously the devils are lawful inherently. There are some that go rogue, but for the most part,
sure.
like, the entire plane of existence is lawful. And when they go through this transformation, though, they ascend from just, like, being lawful in nature to being at one with lawfulness.
Super lawful.
Yeah, they're super lawful. And it kind of makes sense because, like, if there wasn't some sort of supernatural, I don't know what you would call it, like, laws of reality in place for a lot of these entities, like, I don't think the lawfulness of hell would stand up. Like, I feel like there's something, there has to be something making these entities be lawful, because, like, the temptation of doing chaotic things to get the upper hand, I think, would be too strong. So,
okay. Right, yeah, right.
It's just a thought.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it'd be funny to run some kind of encounter or include it in your game where the party recognizes that a pit fiend has done something that is not lawful, like broken some dumb little rule, mm-hmm. and then they get them brought down a rung or so, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it'd I love
be a
that.
Really funny plot point to, like, say, you like broke this one rule, subsection A of this, like, you know, whatever clause. And it'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love that.
How do you guys like to handle that? Like, you know, are you, most DMs, I imagine, didn't write all the laws of this layer of hell down. You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right.
When your players are looking to, like, circumvent some sort of contract or something, how do you guys go about making that work for the team in a cohesive story, like, narrative way?
I think the way I would handle it...
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think the way that I would handle it is, obviously, if this is what you're trying to pull off as a DM, you've put your players in a position where they need to undermine this pit fiend, or maybe one of your players just had the idea and now use the DMF to prepare it. Well, then it's like, okay, maybe put them in a position where they get access to, like, this ancient library or, like, this great source of information, and they start trying to just go through the history of what this pit fiend's been up to for the last 1,000 years, and then maybe with some checks and some rolls and, you know, some dialogue, we can be like, hey, actually, 500 years ago, they did X, you know, to Devil A, when in fact they completely bypassed their boss's permission and they weren't allowed to do that. They reached beyond their jurisdiction, and it could be like that.
And it got past Hell's auditors.
Exactly.
They didn't notice
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cool. That's actually pretty cool.
That's probably what I would do. Making up on the spot.
Like, you have to go find some ancient librarian that's like, I have the secret log, this forgotten information.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, get to another
or
bribe.
You write up a crazy contract and then, like, you purposefully break a little part of the contract while you're role-playing, while you're playing, and see if they notice.
I like that, too.
That might be a little too, like, specific, but...
That's cool, though. I like the kind of, like, oh, here's your first opportunity along the way. Yeah. Like, maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't.
Yeah, and then, depending on, like, the type of game you're running, like, if it's more serious, the law that was broken could be, like, you know, something more believable, but, you know, or if you're a Dungeon Cast member, you'd be like, yeah, Jeff brought cupcakes to the office, and he didn't bring enough for everybody, and now he can't be a pit fiend anymore.
Yeah, they got a rule about that for sure.
Exactly.
For sure.
Back to Levistus with ye.
All right, so with
your Ascension Day cupcakes, after your 1001 Day Ascension Day cupcakes.
Damn. Like, the very first thing you try to do as a pit fiend,
you fuck up.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. All right, with an inflated sense of superiority and entitlement, pit fiends form a grotesque aristocracy in the Infernal Realm. These domineering and manipulative tyrants conspire to eliminate anything that stands between them and their desires, even as they negotiate the convoluted and dangerous politics of the Nine Hells. There is, however, another way pit fiends are born into the world. Asmodeus, the Lord of the Nine Hells, still suffers from the grievous wounds That's in his right. chest inflicted upon him when he was cast from the heavens and crashed into the realm of Beator. From this wound, Asmodeus constantly bleeds, and each drop of his blood becomes a greater devil, most often a pit fiend. Such beings are imparted with a fanatical loyalty towards their creator, and pit fiends created this way can themselves spawn lesser devils, normally bearded devils, by shedding blood. Through this bloodletting process, Asmodeus fills his lair of hell with endless hordes of pit fiends extremely loyal to himself.
That's crazy. He's like crowd surfing on them.
Just this huge, huge bloodletting ceremony, and like every drop of blood creates something new that's loyal to him. That's insane.
It's pretty badass.
It's like a pyramid scheme.
Hey, seriously.
Well, I think Asmodeus probably has like heavier bleeding days and like lighter bleeding days.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, he'll like hold up in his lair, just like bleeding out for like a whole day or something.
He's
like, that.
Oh God, I can't deal with today.
I always forget about the, like, you reminded me right now.
You'd have to have the doors open though. Otherwise it would just like fill up like
a
ball pit.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. He can't
hold
up.
Pit fiend pit.
That's a good point. That'd be a disaster.
He makes so many, he gets like crushed against the walls. The pit fiends have to like shank each other to like clear the room.
No, but like if they shank each other, then they'll bleed and create lesser devils.
Yeah, the first one, I'll take care of this boss. Shank, shank, shank. Now there's a bunch of dudes with beards in here asking about IPAs.
We can say that because we have beards.
Yeah,
right?
It's true. We're all bearding right now.
So even outside of hell, the reputation of the Pit Fiends carries as they lead dozens of devastating armies against demonkind. The dread that their legions inspire in mortals is enough to make most flee for days on end to escape them a mere sight. And more than just extremely powerful combatants, Pit Fiends are not above acts of corruption and often use their guile and hyper-intelligence to entice mortals with Faustian bargains. Pit Fiends are often too busy with their personal plots and numerous duties to be bothered with mortal adventurers, only intervening in affairs when their plans are seriously jeopardized or if they're at the cusp of victory. So the only
that doesn't make sense to me, because it just said that they were purged of all chaos, and then it's like, oh, but also they can be bribed, you know, like then they're not.
No, it's not that they can be bribed. It's not that they can be bribed. It's that they are more than just powerhouses. They have guile and hyperintelligence and can outsmart like their enemies and obviously talk people into selling their souls. I think, that's what I got out of it.
They have they have
acts of corruption, not being corrupt.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, like they're going to step in and do some, like, oh, look, some mortals. They have their own agency, right? And mm-hmm. they're like geared towards, you know, cutting. They're ambitious still, right? So mm-hmm. they want to become archdukes,
yes,
right?
That's exactly
like
right, yeah.
the goal. So they want to get contracts with mortals and souls. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. got to be something they're into.
It's part of the job.
They might go to Eugoliths and like try to get something done under the table or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The only beings that all Pit Fiends are subservient to are the Dukes, Duchesses, and Archdevils of Hell, fulfilling their wills and sometimes serving as seneschals or counselors. Every Pit Fiend acts as a vassal for an Archduke and controls a large domain within their lands, whether in the form of a fortress commander, city governor, or general of a legion. As his personal servants, Asmodeus is the only Archdevil that possesses a retinue of over 12 Pit Fiends. Now, that's not true. Like, that isn't true.
Well, why is he here?
Because he's bleeding.
Because it's what was said. Not just that. So we just did, what's his face? Mephistopheles.
Yeah.
And we talked about how he has an entire, I think it was 28 Pit Fiends under his command, even though they're kind of rebellious against him.
Okay.
I guess they're not his personal retinue. But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like we're, what's the word I'm looking for? We're, I can't think of the saying of.
I don't have enough context, Will, please.
Yeah, it's just like we're nitpicking here.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Nitpicking here. It's like Mephistopheles has 28 of these guys. Like saying that Asmodeus is the only archdevil with 12 of these guys doesn't make any sense.
I mean, maybe he just needs 12, and mm-hmm. they're ranked, right? Like we were talking about, like
they do have rankings. Yeah,
so these are the biggest, baddest Pit Fiends.
I think the point here is that like he's the only one that has 12 Pit Fiends as his personal servants.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it's trying to say.
His secret service
instead
bodyguard
of under his command.
Yeah.
So there might be 28 over.
They all got earpieces.
Yeah,
they're wearing suits.
They're a secret service, definitely. Yeah.
So
their wings look like suits.
There we go. I like that. There we go. Yeah,
that's actually kind of cool.
So when within Beator, they are always in positions of power, commanding legions of lesser devils, judging mortals, and controlling territory, rarely found without an entourage of slaves and weaker devils nearby. Only the greatest Pit Fiends are promoted beyond the ranks of normal devils. The chosen few that are transformed by an archduke into a duke each gain a unique form of devil with its own special abilities. So... Fearless in battle, a Pit Fiend takes on the most powerful foes in single combat, demonstrating its supremacy and arrogance that prevents it from acknowledging any chance of defeat. Every part of a Pit Fiend can be used as a weapon: their fearsome claws, their powerful wings, constricting tails, and menacing maws. The bite of a Pit Fiend is both venomous and infectious, inflicting a wicked disease known as devil chills and filling the victim with vile poisons. The combined effect drains the victim's vitality and strength, rendering them powerless against the brutality of a Pit Fiend.
you trip too hard on lawful and you get devil chills.
I like that. They can envelop themselves in an aura of sheer terror. They can ignite their own bodies to burn anyone too close. Their scale armor and regenerative abilities make them incredibly durable, and good aligned spells and weapons or silvered weapons are the most effective means of stopping their natural healing. The magical abilities of the Pit Fiends are largely based around their ability to create and manipulate flames, often with truly devastating force. Their magic also allows them to paralyze powerful beings, turn themselves invisible, and use a symbol of pain to cripple their enemies. They can easily gate in devils from all ranks, from the lowliest lemurs to fellow Pit Fiends, although the more powerful the type of devil, the fewer they can call on. Pit Fiends can surpass their already mountainous power by training, and those that choose to learn magic can truly... can be truly devastating forces of destruction. Not only do Pit Fiends mages often specialize in evocation magic, but the only limit to their magical power and expertise is time, a particularly frightening notion given their immortality. But while their monstrous forms and array of magical abilities make them formidable foes, the greatest weapon in their arsenal of a Pit Fiend is potentially their minds. Through ingenious planning, fearsome guile, and creative tactics, Pit Fiends can win battles even without their power and magic.
Okay, is there like a training ground these guys go to? Like,
it could be.
Are they cool to go do that? Like they seem like the kind of creatures that have duties.
Yeah. No, you raise a good point. I think this is why most Pit Fiends that you come across don't have spellcasting, because it's hard to find the time.
I can't go train. I want to go train so bad, yeah. But asthma won't let me go.
Yeah. So
there's no gym.
I'm busy being the governor of this city.
Right. Exactly.
Fair enough.
You got duties. Pit Fiends are rarest on the upper levels of, with the exception of Avernus, which is like the front line of the war in a way. Particularly, they avoid the colder layers of hell and can be found in great quantities in Nessus, of course, because he's always bleeding them out down there. Originally, the Dark Eight... Oh, did I cut ahead here? Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah, by one.
Okay, there we go. The Dark Eight. Let's talk about them. So the Dark Eight is a coven of Pit Fiend generals who reside in Nessus, the ninth layer of the Nine Hells, and they plot and strategize the movement of Hell's armies.
Like, and they also want to kill Spider-Man.
these guys are directly in charge of the war. Like, they manage the war on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, shit. Okay. So they're
in charge of everything.
Oh, wow.
Like, anyone who is doing stuff involved in the war has to answer them, except for, obviously, Archduke. Like,
it's the war room.
It's the war room, right? Yeah. It's like,
yeah, they've got the big table in the middle, and they've got all the units that they're moving around.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And, for example, Zariel doesn't have to, if she's still evil in your campaign, depending on if you played Descent into Avernus.
Where are you in the lore timeline?
Yeah, but she doesn't have to answer to them, but she does have to work directly with them. And, like... I would say, like, yeah, she outranks them, but, like, when it comes to actually, like, authority over the war, she's probably equal with them.
Has a equal say in how to move troops and stuff.
That's how I interpret the situation. Obviously, you can interpret it as however you will.
It's probably a push and pull situation, like, with like you're saying, with specifically relating to the war, probably equal playing field. But in terms of what happens in this lair.
Oh, yeah, no, Avernus is hers.
A tiebreaker, she probably goes to her.
Right, right. So, originally, the Dark Eight had 9 members, but after the death of their founder, Cantrum, the remaining 8 renamed the council rather than attempting to find a substitute for their irreplaceable leader. Now, this dude must have been a badass, because he was irreplaceable.
Yeah. How badass can he be? He's dead.
That's fair, actually. I didn't look up what killed him.
Cantrum.
Yeah, see if you can find anything. But cool.
I don't want Centrum. I want Cantrum. Okay.
So the thing is, they do replace their other members, but they didn't replace him. And
an assassin.
An assassin could get anyone, including a Pit Fiend.
Yeah, I guess so. Like a really good assassin.
Just a really good assassin.
Doesn't say who.
Interesting.
Oh, we'll have to. Well, hey, if you guys know. Leave a comment, because I'd like to know more about Cantrum, and we don't particularly... This episode isn't about
him
specifically, yeah.
So contrary to what one might expect, their structure is, the Dark Eight structure, is democratic rather than hierarchical, where one member's actions can be voted on by the remaining 7. Befitting beings of law, the members of the Dark Eight are excellent in regards to teamwork, cooperating to accomplish their grand plans, and for the continued prosperity of devil kind. At the same time, the pit fiends of the Council are still ambitious devils that view one another as rivals. More often than not, Council members are left to their own devices, engaging in treacherous intrigues and political power plays to achieve their nebulous aims. Keeping the Dark Eight focused on their duties is Asmodeus, sometimes directly and other times via the Archdevils. Unlike the Infernal Nobility, above them, the Dark Eight are generals, and each member is responsible for managing one aspect of the Blood War according to their personal judgment.
This is, okay, so there were nine of them, now there's eight of them, so they want to kill Spider-Man, and they want to win the Blood War.
Yes.
I can imagine
top two priorities.
All kind of looking like, you know, one looks like Doc Ock. Like
it's possible. One looks like Willem Dafoe.
I had a question about something I read earlier.
Willem Dafoe would make a great pitch.
He would be great. He'd be fantastic.
Like thick Willem Dafoe.
With his crazy eyes and his face, you know?
Yeah, I mean, just the voice delivery would be great.
There's an account on Instagram. I don't know if it's also on TikTok, but it's the same post every single day where somebody rolls in from the kitchen to the living room on a, what's that thing with
Segway?
Without the handle. What are those called?
Oh, hoverboards.
Yeah, the with the wheels, the hoverboards. Yeah.
One wheel?
Yeah, they roll in on the hoverboard and they say, Godspeed, Spider-Man, and they throw something on the ground and then it cuts to an explosion. It's just that every single day. I think about it a lot.
Okay.
Clearly.
I couldn't think of the thing I wanted to say, so I said that instead.
Okay, gotcha.
To fill the void.
So, the historians of Hell are often baffled by the Dark Eight's apparent immortality, as even after eons of conflict, every member outside of Cantrum himself remains in power. This is despite the fact that the Dark Eight do fight personally in battlefields of the Blood War while still having to contend with the regular assassination attempts and internal conflicts of Hell. While it would appear that they managed to maintain their longevity through guile and cunning rather than magical powers, the very idea that the original Dark Eight remains in power is a devilish deception. In order to create the illusion of an invincible authority, members of the Dark Eight are swiftly replaced by a physically altered pit fiend formerly under their command whenever one can no longer fulfill their duties. Combined with the loyalty of and threats of execution to those under their command, the secret of the Dark Eight has been kept for eons.
That is haunting.
Yes. So,
yeah, it said in the Cantrum assassination bit that he was the only one they admitted publicly had been assassinated. So that tracks, right? Like, he's the only one who died. The rest of us, we're still the same. We're still fighting.
Right. Yeah. And that ties into what you said or asked me at the beginning of the episode where, like, do they all look distinct? They do. That's why they have to grab a Pit Fiend and, like, transmogrify him to look just like Jerry.
Oh, God.
And then he has to be Jerry. Now you're Jerry.
Jerry,
you have to be Jerry now.
Get ready, buddy.
He's got a deep fake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, absolutely right.
Yeah, I love how like plastic surgery in Dungeons & Dragons is just a one magic spell away from being a reality
really
for you.
Really
I remembered
is.
What I wanted to say.
Okay.
Because they all vote on their, on like if seven of them want one of them to do something, they can all just vote on it and then they got to do it pretty much.
I don't know if they have, maybe. It's more along the lines of like, was so-and-so in the right here? Or were they in the wrong? If they're voting in the wrong, they could have him punished.
Oh, okay. I was thinking like, hey, I saw Jeff walk in here. His legs were kind of stiff. And you don't make good decisions when you have to poop, Jeff. So maybe you should go to the bathroom. He's like, no, I'm good. We got
to
get through this.
Everyone take a vote on Jeff if he needs to go to the bathroom.
On. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Now go to the bathroom right now, Jeff. You're outvoted.
All right. It's short rest time.
Okay.
We're making poop jokes.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back.
We are.
With an excellent guest.
Indeed.
Derek Saunders of How Not to DM. Derek, the floor is yours. Please tell us about what it is that you do.
Thank you. Yes. So I run a show called How Not to DM, like Brian said. It is an interview podcast where I bring a new guest on each week from the TTRPG community. They come from various different backgrounds. They do various different things. And so we talk for the first half of the show usually about running games, about some of the advice they've got. It's called How Not to DM because I love asking about the mistakes they feel like they've made and lessons that people can learn from them about running games. And yeah, I love asking that question because when I started getting into running games, the first thing I did was go scour YouTube, you know, and look for places to find information. And I found that the best way to learn was like listen to people running games and pick up on stuff they do.
Right.
You know, notice stuff that they say, oh, I screwed up on this. And you know, that's really how I learned to run the game myself. And so yeah, that's why I love asking other people about the mistakes and the lessons they've learned, because I feel like it makes me a better DM, and then it makes everybody else who listens better as well. Then the second half of the show, we talk about their projects, their work, whatever it is. You know, I've had game designers on, I've had podcasters on, people who make dice, people who are judges on, you know, the Annie Awards, and anything in between. So a big variety of guests, and it's different and interesting every time. So yeah, that's what my show is. It's weekly on Wednesdays. You can find all my information probably in the links for this episode. So I'll send that over to you
too.
And then, if you want, you can go to linktree.com/HN2DM. So that's 5 characters. And you'll find all my links there.
Awesome. Do you have a favorite favorite interview you've done?
That's such a tough question.
That's loaded for sure.
I've got a lot of favorites. I'm bad at favorites. You can ask anybody who knows me well. Like, I've got a favorite color and then favorite sports team for like each of the sports, or I guess each of the leagues within the sports.
Who's your baseball team? Let's get this out of the way now.
I grew up in Colorado, so it's the Rockies. Like, ride or die, but if I'm going to watch, it'll be the Rockies.
They were in the
World Series when I was in high school, so that was fun.
But like, the Rockies deserve better. They deserve better than what they've got. You guys deserve better than what you got. That's all I'll say.
It's okay. We give a lot of good players to other teams.
It's mind-boggling.
You guys are riding a Stanley Cup championship over there this season. So that's cool.
That is good, though. Grew up watching the Avs, too. Love the Avs.
Yeah.
Love the Broncos,
they're fun to watch.
Even though I hate the Broncos right now. Anyway, so that's a little bit about my show. It's been a ton of fun. I've been doing it for almost 2 years now. Do you know when this episode is coming out, just as a side note?
I want
next week.
Is it from today?
We're recording on the 2nd. So, what's like the 9th or something like that?
Do you have a preference for it coming out a little later?
No. Okay. It's just a quick turnaround. Yeah. You know, props for that. That's awesome. Another thing that's happening is by this episode release or maybe a week or two after, I'm going to be selling a game that I put on Kickstarter.
Oh, cool.
It's called Two Hot One Shot. I don't know if you two are big Hot Sauce or Hot Ones fans.
I definitely know about it.
Yeah, I know about it as well.
I've had the sauces.
My friend and I... You do. Excellent. I do too.
Well, I don't own them, but I've tasted them.
Oh, you've had them. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My buddy and I wrote rules to add to your 5e game where you like eat 10 spicy wings as you're playing.
It
makes it super fun. So, cool. And it's really good content too. So if you're out there listening and you like making content, you know, you should check it out. But yeah, it's called Two Hot One Shot. There's a one shot that we wrote and also just the basic rules that you can buy and get your hot sauce fix in while you're playing D&D with your buddies. And you could use it for other TTRPGs too, anything that you're rolling dice to succeed. That should be for sale on Itch and drive through at least probably by the time this comes out, if not maybe a few days after. So I'll hit you guys up with those links too.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, thanks, man.
Lastly, I'll send you guys a copy. You can check it out. But cool. Lastly, I am doing Dungeon 23. I don't know if either of you have heard of it for this year. Okay. Mm. So Dungeon 23, I'm going to slaughter the guy's name, so I'm not going to pretend like I remember who it is. But some guy said, hey, in 2023, I'm going to make a new room for a mega dungeon every day. And so I'm doing it too. You can check out the hashtag Dungeon23. Oh. A lot of other people are doing it. But yeah, I've got some graph paper by my bed and every night I'm just like drawing a new room, deciding what's in it, and making dungeons from it for some inspiration. So
nice. Yeah, that's 364 room dungeon. That's pretty badass.
That's
I like that.
Freaking cool. Yeah, I looked it up. I'm seeing what's available to see on Google for this project. I'm definitely going to look into that later. Cool, that's awesome. Beans.
Yeah, there's a link to the guy's blog and he's got a ton of resources too. I'll send you guys that later. But and you can throw it in the notes if you want, but he's got like resources on traps and you know, ways to find inspiration for new rooms and that kind of thing to get you started if you're interested. I'm going to do 13 little dungeons based on the moon cycles and like do a different theme for each one so I don't get bored. You know, I'm probably going to do like a spaceship one and a castle and this and that and just keep it fresh. But yeah, that's something else fun I'm working on. Nothing like that's making me money or anything, but just for fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like a ton of fun. The the hot sauce thing sounds hilarious.
Yeah, I love it.
The dungeon thing is super creative. It's so much fun. Really, really cool. Well, thanks, Derek. This is going to be a thick notes section, and I think it's going to be rich down there. So don't forget to go check that stuff out, everybody.
Are we ready
too much stuff
to get back to Pit Fiends?
I think so.
All right, let's do it. So Brian's going to read the stat block, and we're going to comment on it.
Did we have a question about the chill?
Oh,
the devil chill.
I think we can talk about that at the bite.
That's good. That's all good. Right. I like that. So pit fiends, they're large devils, they're lawful evil, and they love those little places underneath where your skin folds. Absolutely can't get enough of them. Armor class is 19 natural armor. Their hit points are 300. That's 24 D10 plus 168. Real chonky. The thickest Will of Defoe you can think of. Speed is 30 feet. They can fly at 60 feet. And last year's thumbnail art is a picture of a pit fiend.
It's a Balor.
It's a Balor. Sorry. I keep forgetting. They look pretty similar.
There is a lot of similarity in their look, yeah.
Well, we haven't covered the Balor yet.
Kind of quintessential devil look.
Yeah. They kind of do. Like the monster version. I mean, like when you say quintessential devil look, I think a lot of people think of like a hoofed creature with fur. But for D&D specifically, yes, this is it.
Yeah.
Their strength is 26. That's plus 8. I'm just doing the pluses now. Like, God, old ways. Strength is plus 8. Dex is plus 2. Con is plus 7. Intelligence plus 6. Wisdom plus 4. And Charisma plus 7. Ah, man, that's bulky. It's a bulky stat.
Yeah, no, they're big. This is endgame boss shit.
Yeah, totally. Saving throws, Dex plus 8. Con plus 13. Wisdom plus 10. Their damage resistances are cold, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks that are not silvered. Damage immunities, fire and...
Poison.
Poison. Condition immunities...
Poison.
Yep. Yeah, we're on it now. The senses are true sight of 120 feet. Passive perception is 14. Languages, infernal and...
passive perception.
Yeah, is it? I can't recall off the top of my head
on
other
stats,
ones.
It's right.
Yeah.
Based on their stats, it's right, but like it just seems low to
low
me.
Low for such a like it's true. Semi omnipotent creature.
Sight.
Yeah.
It should be closer to 120 feet. I don't know.
So you can sneak up on these bad boys. That's how they get assassinated, is their low, their low
That's
passives.
How they got Kendrum, damn it. That's hilarious.
You're right.
They're speaking Infernal and Telepathy. Their challenge rating is a robust 20. That's 25,000 experience points with a proficiency bonus of +6. Will, how does that challenge rating feel to you?
The challenge rating 20, sorry, I spaced out. What?
How does challenge rating 20 sit with you?
I think it feels about right for the stat block.
Derek, is that something in your wheelhouse? Does that feel good, 20?
My party of level 11s would have difficulty with it. Another game I play in where we're level like 14 and we have a bunch of crazy broken items, we could probably handle it.
I think
it depends on what your party's got. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They've got a fear aura. Any creature hostile to the Pit Fiend that starts its turn within 20 feet of the Pit Fiend must make a DC 21 wisdom saving throw unless the Pit Fiend is incapacitated. On a failed save, the creature is frightened until the start of its next turn. If a creature's saving throw is successful, the creature is immune to the Pit Fiend's fear aura for the next 24 hours. Classic fear rules. Very cool.
Yeah.
So if it's sleeping,
fear was the start of your turn. So you make the saving throw at the start of your turn, and if you make it, you get a turn.
That's true, yeah.
It's not like a
that is
like
interesting.
Another effect where you roll.
Most effects you roll at the end, yeah.
Yeah, like you are afraid, and now you get that 6 seconds to fight it off.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Magic resistance. The Pit Fiend has advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Pit Fiend's weapons are magical. Innate spellcasting. The Pit Fiend's spellcasting ability is Charisma. Spell save DC is 21, which is fairly high. The Pit Fiend can innately cast the following spells, requiring no material components. At will, Detect Magic and Fireball tracks. And then 3 times a day, they can Hold Monster and cast Wall of Fire. All 4 of those are fairly good spells.
Yeah, they're good spells. I do wish they added a couple. I mean, this is a high-level monster, like a hyper-intelligent monster. Can we give it just a couple more spells?
I think it tracks with the lore.
I feel like Hold Person would be more... I guess Hold Person would be good against adventurers, but it says it doesn't deal with adventurers that much, right? So
I'd imagine not. I'd imagine more like they're dealing with demons. So yeah.
Hold Monster works on people, too, because it's just choose a creature.
Creatures. People are creatures. We're all animals.
We're all animals. But
Okay, so what spells would you guys add on for a Pit Fiend that did its push-ups and ate its vegetables and drank its juice?
I mean, it should have Command. That's a low-level spell, but let me just look up the wizard spell list. But Command was the first one to come to my mind.
Yeah, like, I'm thinking not really much enchantment stuff, more like, or maybe not even illusion stuff, more evocation.
Evocation and maybe, no, I think there's going to be some enchantment, because a lot of the mind control stuff is enchantment.
The charisma is very high, and that is a spell save. So
I'm just pulling up a 7th level spell.
I might
spell
give it something to make its weapon magical, perhaps.
Yeah,
you know, something like
Power
that.
Word Pain. I think it should have Power Word Pain.
It does have magic weapons, so any weapon it has becomes magical.
Power Word Pain and Symbol of Pain and Symbol of Fear and Symbol of Death.
Do some teleport stuff, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But you know what? We're DMs. We can totally just do that whenever we want.
Yeah.
So.
Might give it Bane.
Yeah, give it Bane, give it Command.
That feels like something it would do. Yeah.
Yeah. I would go as far as making Bane a thing that they could do without burning their action. Like they can use Bane
like a legendary
as
action or something.
Yeah. And in place of one of their 4 attacks.
Mm.
Yeah. Or legendary action. That's actually probably better.
Yeah. I could see one of these having legendary actions built in.
Yeah, like, the fact that this one doesn't is strange to me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it is.
So actions, we've got the multi-attack. The Pit Fiend makes 4 attacks, one with its bite, one with its claw, and one with its mace, and one with its tail. Shit. Okay, so the bite. It's a melee weapon attack with +14 to hit. It's going to reach 5 feet on 1 target. It's going to hit for 22 or 46 +8 piercing damage. The target must also succeed on a DC 21 constitution saving throw or become poisoned. While poisoned in this way, the target can't regain hit points and takes 21 or 66 poison damage at the start of each of its turns. Mm-hmm. The poisoned target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on a success.
That's tough. The can't be healed thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's a lot of character, like, what, dwarves can't get poisoned, like
they have advantage on poison saves, I believe.
Okay,
yeah.
But isn't there?
Yeah, and
go ahead, Derek.
I think they might be resistant to poison as well, dwarves, but I'm not sure. Green dragonborns will,
right?
So I know you guys want to talk about the bite. Want to talk about devil chills specifically because it's not here. I pulled up the Monstrous Manual, and so it looks like this goes all the way back to 4th edition. So when the Pit Fiend bites, not only is it all the poison stuff, but also you become diseased with devil chills.
Ooh.
Now, this disease, what it does, its effect is it has an onset of 1d4 days, and it decreases your strength score by 1d4. Every day that you have it until you save off of it. And that's why it's not in 5th edition. 5th edition has moved very far away from fucking with ability scores.
Yeah, the debilitation of that. It's
which, I mean, I think it's a cool tool to have, being able to attack your players in a different way. But for whatever reason, 5e has moved away from that.
I feel like it's more in the hands of the DM
than
anything to do things like that. You have to like take some control instead of having a creature sort of randomly pop it off on you.
And then they have replaced it. So it's not just taken away. They've replaced it with that inability to heal. So
that's true.
Yeah.
That's
true. So maybe that's the new devil chills.
Which is something.
on that note, as a DM that has run encounters or like whole entire adventures where my players are poisoned, it makes combat so long because everyone
is a disadvantage,
is constantly
right?
missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like a slog. So in like really up tempo, like adventures, don't do that. I would feel like,
right.
As a how not to DM special for you, Derek. It's like, that's what I wouldn't do.
I'll take it.
Yeah. I would be careful when you poison your players, because maybe it is, you want this pit fiend fight to go for a long time, and poisoning people with this bite might be a pretty cool thing to do in it.
Right.
Give you that extra level of urgency. So next we have the claw. Melee weapon attack is a plus 14 to hit with a reach of 10 feet on one target. I like the reach of 10 feet stuff. I think it makes sense for these giant creatures.
Yeah. If anything, I almost think that they should have a longer reach. Because they're fucking huge.
Yeah, like maybe they maybe 15. The tail should have 15.
Yeah, maybe.
The claw hit is going to do 17. That's 2d8 plus 8 slashing damage. Next, they have the mace. Melee weapon attack plus 14 to hit. Also a reach of 10 feet. So that's like bugbear status with the long arms.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hit one target for 15 or 2d6 plus 8 bludgeoning damage plus 21, 66 fire damage. That's a cool mace.
Very cool mace.
Explodes people. And then the tail attack is a melee weapon attack with plus 14 to hit, reach of 10 feet, one target, hits for 24 chonky damage. That's 3d10 plus 8 bludgeoning. Wow.
Yeah, these guys dish out a ton of damage in a single round if all four of their attacks connect.
Yeah.
And with a plus 14, most of these attacks are probably going to connect, because even in endgame, most characters, the highest AC you're going to see is 22, maybe 23.
Okay.
You know, maybe a blade singer can get up to 25.
Yeah.
But yeah, these plus 14s, most of them are going to hit.
They're probably landing some attacks. Yeah, this bite is very serious, actually. It's
99 total damage. Ooh. On those averages.
Yeah. Oh man, so you could absolutely rumble one player.
Oh yeah,
bad.
For sure. And then pit fiends, by their very nature, like the lore dictates that I'm pretty much never going to just fight a pit fiend without anybody else. Like they're going to have their
minions.
Bodyguards. They're going to have their minions. Yeah.
So
for sure,
with this multi attack, you're going to be using. You can't stack these attacks, right? Like you can't opt to bite twice and.
No. No,
do a tail, like a tail, two tail attacks and two bites. I have to do one of each, right?
Yes, you have to do one of each.
You could, but
I mean, you as a DM, you could, but that's not how it should play out,
right? Yeah,
I'm just gonna bite you four times.
That's what I'm saying is like, why not? But it kind of makes sense that it's gonna be swing one arm, swing another arm. The bite on this, just getting, I like the bite attack.
Yeah.
With the picture next to
it. It's the crown jewel of the attacks.
Yeah. These teeth are massive, you know, like it should be meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I might do another bite, but just not do poison. Like, the poison has to come back into the fangs. So one bite, you have to make the con save, and then in another bite, you don't. Something like
that's
that.
Cool. I think it's nice for flavor to sort of mix it up a little bit. I do have a summoner variant pit fiend that I pulled up, which I thought was cool with the ice devil.
Yeah, it's essentially going to be the same stats with the ability to summon other dudes.
Exactly. So the summon devil once per day. The devil chooses what to summon and attempt a magical summoning. A pit fiend summons 2d4 bearded devils, 1d4 barbed devils, or 1 Aranese with no chance of failure. So it could just do the Aranese. Or it will get these.
I like the idea of doing this with the pit fiends that are descendant of Asmodeus' blood, because then I just picture one like cutting their hand and letting the blood drip onto the sand, and then it sprouts more, and that's how they summon them.
They stab,
very cinematic.
Stab their armpit. Exactly.
Yeah. Why? No.
That's a pit fiend.
Pit fiend.
A pity fiend.
Oh, my gosh.
It took me too long to get that when you did that at the beginning of the step block. I was like, what is he talking about? Oh, right.
Do you guys have anything to add to pit fiends?
I like the 10 feet. I like the bite claw. Or the claw, mace, and tail is at 10 foot, right? So anytime anyone comes into melee with you, you take a step back. You're still within 10 feet of all of them, and they don't get an opportunity attack against you, but they have to, like, move up again. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's some tactical things you could do with it, which are interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, reach of 10 feet is cool. I think reach of 15 with the tail would be, you know, that would surprise some players.
Yeah, the tail is quite long, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks chonky. Yeah. It's like a big nasty snake. So
I think the only thing I have is, like, I have little tweaks here and there that I would do that's like an opinion, but I think on a more objective point of view, this thing needs legendary actions. It's a creature that should have them. I think it's an oversight that it doesn't have them.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's not technically a legendary creature, right? It's like the best foot soldier.
I mean, but dragons are legendary creatures, and there's multiples of them.
Yeah, I think they're more unique than a pit fiend, though.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Harder to make?
What, a red dragon? Red dragon?
Pit fiends seem easier to make than a red dragon, for sure.
Okay, all right. I mean, Asmodeus bleeds them out, so I suppose.
Yeah, well, maybe they don't have legendary. Maybe they're power capped. Like, these creatures should have legendary actions, but that would make them too powerful. And like, if they banded together in hell, they could do some major damage with those extra action economies. What keeps them in check?
Okay, for sure.
And their loyalty.
For sure.
The archdevils are like, no, you don't get legendary.
Not
actions.
Allowed. That's too funny.
It's in the rules.
All right.
Yeah, adults and ancient black dragons get them, but anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. If only ancient dragons got them, I would be like, okay, but adult dragons do get them too. So, but yeah, that's just my opinion.
Yeah,
it's an end game kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
just for fun.
Yeah, okay, yeah. If your pit fiend is your BBEG, then yeah, I'll give them legendary actions. They need it.
What's the level below legendary in your mythos? You know,
I don't know, rare? Notable.
Yeah.
It's a notable creature.
Notable.
Hell's hero actions.
Hell's hero. Oh, boy. All right, guys.
I'll bet you named pit fiends might have them. Like, Cantrum probably would, right? He's a named pit fiend. He's got...
That's true.
He's
They're like, got, we can't copy him. He has legendary actions.
They let Cantrum go to the gym. He's so strong. He can attack when it's not his turn.
That's hilarious. All right, guys. I think we can call it a game there.
Well, actually, let's let Derek plug one last time.
Derek.
Give it to the guest. So, Derek, where can we find where can we find your stuff?
Yeah, I am Derek. I'm the host of the How Not to DM podcast. You can find it on any podcatcher. I also post them on YouTube. It's audio only, so there's nothing fun to watch, but you can put it in the background and listen while you're doing something else. You can find all of my episodes, like I said, on any podcatcher. You can also find my links for my socials on my Linktree, which is linktree.com/HN2DM. And I'm getting close to the end of my third season. It'll be ending in March here. So there's two full seasons ready to binge. The third season, you can jump in whenever. Also, if you have come to listen to this because you listen to my podcast and you haven't heard of the Dungeon Cast yet, please go check it out. You can listen to them in any order, just like my show. There's no continuity necessary because they're talking about different topics each time. So you're doing some game prep, you want to learn some more lore or whatever, yeah, go check out the Dungeon Cast.
Oh, thanks for that, man. Yeah, appreciate it. And thanks for anybody that's from How Not to DM for sticking around and listening. Derek's right. We don't necessarily have a light continuity on the show, so there is it is rewarding to listen to it in order, I guess. But you really don't need to do that. Yeah. You just need to know who Demogorgon is.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
That
we like him.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
So that's a good way to like, okay, this is the true end of Year of the Fiend.
Well, no, we got one more. We have to do Balor still.
Oh, shit. That's right. The one we'll I keep thinking that we're talking about. Okay. So we do have one more. But all the demon episodes are done, huh? Like, that's pretty much it.
So there's plenty of other demon lords, but we don't really have stat blocks for a lot of them.
Right.
I don't like to cover them if we don't have a stat block, but that doesn't mean we won't.
Because they're not official 5e, technically.
No, it's just like I like having something more to sink my teeth into besides just the lore.
Oh, it makes it more playable, like in-game relatable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. You can act on it as a player without having to go fish something homebrew or homebrew something yourself up.
That's so true. Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. No long rest on this one, so we are going to truly call a game. Thanks a lot for coming on, Derek. We really appreciate it.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Indeed.
Thank you, Will and Brian. It's been a pleasure. Love your show.
Thanks, man.
I've listened to a lot of the episodes, and they're super useful for my own game prep. So, yeah, it's been awesome to be on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right. We'll call it a game.
Talk to you guys later.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.